Welcome to the Spitball Sessions. Prepare to enter a world of mechanics, the future of game creation, the evolution of design. With your two hosts, Josh Noyes and Luke Boulay. This is the dawning of the new age of remix.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Spitball Sessions, a gaming concept podcast with no apparent purpose, except maybe to bring wonder to little people.
Yes.
Yes. I'm Luke Boulay, and I'll be your host for this session. I'm so sorry, all of you. I'm joined with our resident editor and wrestling fanatic, Josh. How are things going with you, Josh?
Well, things are going with me pretty well, but I just figured I'd mention, as our patented wrestling fanatic, that unfortunately our sound engineer... Our former sound engineer, Trevor, unfortunately has some personal business that he needs to take care of. So for the future, at least for the near future, probably for the long term, I will be taking over as a sound engineer. And I just wanted to promise to everybody listening that things will never, ever be the same again.
Okay, moment of silence over. Great. As an explanation of what we're trying to achieve here, this podcast exists as a means to examine games and discuss their nuances. Mostly, though, it devolves into nonsense segued into nonsense. Isn't that right, Josh?
That's true. I should point out that I'm actually running out of wrestler catchphrases, so if people want to give me some more, I have four or five more, but towards the end of this year, I'm going to start needing some more. So if people want to pass me some more, I'd appreciate it.
Please don't. I'd like to see what he can come up with for himself.
I'm going to have to start watching more wrestling. I'm going to have to start watching wrestling.
Okay, so... Today's discussion is going to be ASCII applications.
Wait, we should clarify. Is that applications for ASCII or applications that use ASCII?
Applications for ASCII.
Okay.
For those of you who do not know, all of like five of you, ASCII is a thing.
Yes, ASCII is a thing.
It's a graphical technique using characters. I'm trying to remember what ASCII stands for.
Standard Code for Information Interchange.
Yes. So it's a graphic system that uses a tiled character system to represent things on a screen.
Yes.
Most roguelikes use this, most notably. If you're interested into finding out what a roguelike is, check out Roguelike Radio.
And I imagine most people know what ASCII is. If you don't, basically it is the letters and numbers of the keyboard and then all of the symbols that are above the letters and numbers on the keyboard. That's the basic ASCII table.
Yeah. And they are representative of certain things. So. Right.
So for example, in a roguelike, you might use a D to represent a dragon, or you might use a period to represent a open door, or you might use a slash to represent an open door, or you might use a line, a pipe to represent, which is the thing that looks like a line, and to represent a sword.
Most common and recognized one, the at symbol, which usually represents the main character.
Yes.
Or
that you're talking to somebody on Twitter.
Yes. And if you want to talk to somebody on Twitter,
follow us at Spitball Session.
At Spitball Sessions. Mm-hmm. Or you can...
just Spitball Session.
Yes.
Anyway, enough of our own buzz marketing.
Okay, so there are certain limitations to ASCII text because I think it requires a minimum of... Well, not necessarily a minimum.
Well, there is also ANSI, which I'm looking up I forget what that actually stands for. But there's also ASCII, ANSI is just the American National Standards Institute. That can't be right. But there's,
yeah, ANSI is like safety.
ANSI escape code. Yeah. Or character set, excuse me. It's a more extended version of ASCII, basically.
Let's boil this down and just say, games that use character sets represent graphics as opposed to discrete graphics like rendered.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Although there is one that does lead to one other question, because one of the other things that ASCII traditionally was used for, not so much nowadays, but traditionally was used for, was things like making actual, like people used to make movies in ASCII and used to make images out of ASCII, which they don't really need to do as much anymore, but it is sort of a lost art. So would you include that in there? Like, remember, there used to be, like, somebody made the entire, redrew the entire Star Wars movies in ASCII.
Yes, I remember that. Those are...
I don't know why, but they did.
Those are amusing, and they can be done. They're kind of hard to follow. I would say...
Because I will tell you, I could immediately think of a way to use that.
go for it.
Nidhogg.
Nidhogg. You know, Nidhogg could probably work as an ASCII text treatment.
I mean, if each arm was a like, I mean, each arm has basically four different
pixels.
Four different ways of saying, so you could do a straight line.
You're breaking this down at a larger dimension than I'm thinking.
I'm thinking that, say, the person is made up of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 ASCII characters, and then the sword would be a 6th. So his head would be like the at symbol, and then his body would be a pipe, and then each of his arms would be a slash, and then each of his legs would be a slash.
Oh, it's doable.
That's very simple, but you could do it.
Yeah, so a representative... A much more representative graphic style, where it would visually reflect what is going on, not.
And it's weird, like, actually, I'm noticing that ASCII tile sets are actually starting to fall out. Like, even in roguelikes nowadays, they're actually starting to fall out of favor. I mean, even in something like Dwarf Fortress, which is a game we both love, I think I'm one of the few, like,
I'm one of the few people who still uses the
ASCII stuff, and I know when I go onto Reddit, like, I get people getting mad at me when I see one that's a tile set and say that I can't understand. Like, I ask people to explain what's going on in the picture because I'm like,
that's because they assume you're griefing them because most people
But when I say, like, I'm sorry, I don't use the tile set, I don't know what that looks like, I've only used the ASCII, people get mad. They're like, well, you know, stop trying to lord it over us that you still use the. It's like, I'm not. I don't understand what the things look like in the graphical tile sets. You know, I imagine you'd have the same problem if you looked at the ASCII without, you know, if you're used to the tile sets.
Well, that's true. I'm not defending their response, but...
No, I mean, it's an aggressive response.
It stands to reason because there are people out there that do that. That's a form of...
No, person, sure. It's a way of trolling. But, I mean, even like, a game that I've talked about several times and that I really like, you know, Tales of Majael doesn't even use ASCII anymore. It's fully graphical.
There are a lot of... it's being replaced with tiles. So in a way, what I'm asking for here is kind of like
remake?
I'm thinking of like returning to an old technique.
Sure. Some of my old favorite old like DOS games used. Like I really like the Kingdom of Kroz games, which were like... Old, like, you and I used to play, like, Lad and Castle of the Winds. And
oh,
all those.
Lad.
Like,
I remember Local Area Dungeon. That's a crawl I haven't heard about in a long time.
Well, that's because it's really hard to find. But, like, this was a real-time game that was, like, back when monitors were still monochrome, and it used ASCII, and it moved in real-time, and it was actually a really interesting game, but it was weird because in some levels, it was side-scrolling E, and in other levels, it was top-down E. And, like, there was one level where you were, like, climbing on vines, and then in another level, you'd be, like, walking around in the woods, and you'd be being chased by centipedes in the forest. And, like, you could never really tell whether you were side-scrolling or running, except that sometimes you'd fall into a pit, and sometimes you wouldn't.
I just brought up Lad.
Yeah, that's a good game.
Oh, the nostalgia. That was made in 94.
I know. Wow. Well, look up Kroz. I think that was made in Kroz. 89.
C-R-O-Z?
K-R-O-Z. It's Zork spelled backwards.
Oh, okay. Yes. Gotcha.
I think they're related, and I don't remember why.
Oh, wow. That looks awesome.
But, like, I beat that game. It was 25 levels, and I beat it. But, like, it used things like... It used the club symbol from, like, a pack of cards to represent trees.
Yes. That's like, pretty common. Yeah. So, okay. Let's take a step back. Say... avoiding direct discrete graphics representation, like your idea of Nidhogg.
Okay.
Let's avoid that. Let's think of different ways that we can actually take the ASCII tile set and representative, and what other types of games could we create? I have an idea, but I want to see what you think up first.
Well, you go ahead, because I'm going to need a few seconds to think.
So I think one place where this could shine as an option is actually... a immersive 4X space game.
Why?
Why not?
Well, no, I mean, let me rephrase that. Yes, clearly you could do that. I'm not sure that would be a good thing to do.
Well, that's the question. Would it make it better? No. I'm not sure that it would. There's okay. So as an example, a game that I've played a little bit and I really enjoyed.
Aurora.
Is Aurora.
Yes.
The maps are very basic line drawing representations, dots and text to tell you what you're looking at. Upgrading that, and this is an upgrade, to symbols would help you to recognize what you're looking at. Like ship types, planet types, stuff like that.
So here I think is the reason at some point, and I think this is why even roguelikes are starting to trend away from it, the problem with ASCII is there is, at some point, there is a maximum level of things you can do with ASCII. And at some point, either the screen gets so cluttered that it becomes difficult to tell what's going on, or there's just too much information that you want to capture. I mean, for example, you could, technically, if you want to, and I could see doing this very simply, you could do StarCraft as a completely ASCII shell.
That'd be fun.
I mean, it's not that hard if you made each of the... If you made each of the buildings the letter that corresponds to the building, like a barracks is a B and a bunker is a U, and you already know all the hotkeys.
I have to say, if you did that at the size of like a 32-pixel character,
yeah.
It would actually have higher information density than the original StarCraft maps ever had.
Right, but I mean, even if you just do it as like just really large letters or whatnot, like. You know, that are the size of, like, you could even just do it as a skin for StarCraft 2 and just replace it all with ASCII art. Like, you could do that, and it would be fine, but I don't know, like, and in that case, I think you could almost gain from it because it would be, you know.
I had this mental image of, like, flat terrain.
Yeah.
And these big 3D bees sticking up out of the ground where the barracks is.
Yeah, basically.
And then little, what are those called? C for
but,
commandos.
But the reason that I think it would work in something, actually, I think it would. You could. I'm not saying you should, but you could do this in most real-time strategy games because they are fast-moving, they are simplified. The information is already very, very striated to make it.
Because you have
immediately. You need to process what you're seeing very quickly, and every character in that game looks unique. A Mutalisk and a Hydralisk look nothing like each other, and a Hydralisk looks nothing like an SCV, and they all have very distinct silhouettes. So if you replace that with letters, once you learned what they did, which would obviously take a few days, but it also took me a few days to know what a Hydralisk looked like, you know, you would very quickly be able to instantly replace those things in your mind in the same way that somebody who plays music somebody who plays music really well can sight read a note chart in the way that I, as somebody who is incompetent at music, cannot. Or could once upon a time when I played music a lot and can't anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because now I've been out of it long enough that when I see a note staff, I have to be like, oh, right, that's a G, that's an A, that's an A, that's an F. Okay, that means I do this, then I do this, then I do this. Where somebody else who's looking at that goes, oh, that means I go blah, 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 and they can hear it in their head how it's going to sound too. And I think for a simplified game like a real-time strategy game, you could easily do it. But there's a difference between saying that you can do it and saying that there's an advantage to doing it.
So what could we do that would actually have an advantage to an ASCII text system? Is there any?
I'm not sure, but that's what I mean. Like, I agree with you. You absolutely can do things with ASCII. I'm just... So, like, yes, I agree. Actually, I think a 4X game is actually a bad place to do it because, yes, Aurora, the artwork would probably be a step up if you started using basic ASCII, but the problem is there's so much information in that game. That game is so informationally dense that even if you start including colors, like, for example, if you made B like a blue star and then you colored each one to represent a different planet type, like, sure, you could do it. You have millions of colors, but at that point, you might as well just use graphical representations. I think there's so much information in a 4X game that it actually starts to get very cluttered. Same way with something like Civ. I don't think you could do Civ as ASCII.
Possibly.
You know what you could do it, though?
What?
And this is one that I think actually could work. Though, again, I'm not necessarily sure it would make it better, but it would be interesting as a skin, for example, is something like Frozen Cortex or Frozen Synapse. But again, those are already very simple games.
Yeah. So, yeah. Would it make it more fun or interesting to do something like that?
I don't know.
That's the tough part.
I'm not sure that it would necessarily make it more fun or interesting, but it would certainly be a different look. At some point, I feel like that is kind of the issue, is that at some point, the issues with ASCII is that it is a very simple character set, which is why I think roguelikes use it. I don't think roguelikes use it because it is simple.
I think it was limitations of the time.
That's what I mean.
When they were originally created.
It's sort of the opposite. There was nothing essentially better about not using it, and it was simple enough for what they were doing.
Actually, it was much better to use it because it was representative of a grid.
I actually think you could do it for a tactics game, but at some point, a tactics game isn't that different from roguelike.
How about a racing game?
How about a racing game?
Well, I mean, I guess you could use it as a something representative of, what is it? No, it's not initial D. What is that? Formula D?
Oh, Formula Day, yeah.
Something like that might work, but...
But Formula Day isn't a racing game. It's a board game.
Well, it's a racing board game.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so...
But I mean, if you're going to do... I mean, yes, again, you could very easily turn a board game into an ASCII game. If you made each of the spaces a dot, I'm just not sure anybody would want to play that.
No, not really. Well, that's the big question, I guess, is there anything that we can think of where ASCII text would be better? I keep asking this question. I'm not getting an answer.
I don't know. I've really been trying to think about this for a while. I think to some extent, the reason we don't do a lot of it is because it kind of isn't.
I know.
What?
Text adventure.
That's cheating. I mean, well, let's go back. And I mean, this is something that I've done, had us do before. I think I know what it is about ASCII that you like, but what is it about ASCII that makes you want to do this? Do you just feel it's being underserved? Like, what are you trying to get out of this?
I think it's...
Okay.
It's not necessarily that it's underserved. It's just like the same motivation that's kind of led us back to the 8-bit pixel graphics and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The same
idea I don't like that those either, for what it's worth. I feel like a lot of those are...
Well, this is...
So a lot of people try
to... This is part of the argument that we should probably cover, is the fact that, you know, just because you don't like it doesn't necessarily mean that it doesn't hold some value.
I'm not saying it doesn't hold value. What I'm saying is, I think people have gone to that well too often, and I think a lot of people have not done it well.
No.
I think a lot of people have used it as shorthand who don't understand, like, and this is something that the Giant Bomb guys have brought up a lot, is, like, 8-bit, an actual 8-bit is very, very different from the...
Fake 8-bit.
8-bit graphics that we get, the quote-unquote 8-bit that we get in a lot of games.
For those of you without visual audio...
I said quote-unquote.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I did. I said quote-unquote 8-bit.
I'm crazy.
That's fine. Yeah, yes, there's a big difference between actual 8 and 16-bit. And there are some people who have done amazing things with that, who have very specifically stuck to a 16-bit palette. Well, and then there are people who've done, like Bastion, for example, which feels 8-bit, but it's very definitely not 8-bit.
Bastion.
I mean, Bastion feels 16-bit, but isn't actually 16-bit.
Okay.
Like, it feels like what I think of when I think of Secret of Mana, but Secret of Mana never looked that good.
No. And you know what? A lot of that is, it's interesting because a lot of the nostalgia comes from the fact that with this limitation,
mm-hmm.
there were good designers that worked really hard
right.
to make some great games. And the great games are what carry through to the future,
right.
to what we remember as being these great examples. And then people revisit and they try to do that, and they don't meet that standard for two good reasons. One, the limitations that force them into 8-bit aren't there. So
right.
those limitations aren't worked around. And two, they're still not as good as those greats that made those amazing games that stood the test of
True.
Time. Not to say that there aren't people out there that made great games that will sure. stand the test of time, but... We're still slogging
well,
through.
Well, and also because a lot of people aren't necessarily doing, you know, yes, some of them are doing it out of nostalgia. Some of it are doing it out of a genuine love. Some of them are doing it because it is the hot thing of the moment.
And it's
easy to
capitalize
money. On. Yes, it is money.
And unfortunately, and that's the other thing. During that era when 8-bit games were being created,
right.
that's like early
that's
gaming terra, those people were doing it out of a passion because there was no... understanding. They're like, oh, we might be able to make a little money off of this, but they weren't doing this with this expectation of getting rich.
But I actually think it's even beyond that, and this is actually something that you hear a lot if you listen to a lot of movie podcasts, which I do, is think about the difference between the original Star Wars trilogy and the modern Star Wars trilogy. Not the new J.J. Abrams one, but the episodes 4, 5, and 6 and episodes 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, of course.
What happened in between those two things?
It became popular. They bought into their own...
No, completely different. Computer-generated graphics.
Oh, okay.
Because all of the effects in the original Star Wars trilogy were practical effects. And nowadays, CGI is everywhere. You can do whatever you want. Everything is green screen.
No.
It's something you hear a lot if you want...
I hear a lot of it, but I think that's nonsense. As a good running example...
Okay.
Donkey Kong Country...
Yeah.
The entire series was CG graphics, and it was done tastefully, and it was done well.
No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, in movies, bad movies tend to try to quote unquote hide it by putting in a lot of CGI effects, because effects are cheap, effects are easy, and people think that that effects can just hide a bad plot. A good game cannot be covered for by good art. Good art accentuates a good game. So people who are trying to hide the fact that they have a bad game by making it look faux 8-bit, you know, that's what I mean is, so it's very, I think it's very easy for people to say, to reach for, well, we have this broad, I mean, I can do 8-bit, but I also have, I don't have the limitations of 8-bit, so I can do like 12 and a half bit.
So I guess what you're saying is that the game was created for the sake of making a great game using the resources at hand.
Right.
Whereas today, people are making games for the sake of 8-bit without having an actual good game at hand.
Well, not necessarily that. What I'm saying is that in the same way that people that back in the day, such as in the original Star Wars, you had to think very carefully about every effect you did. You had to plan in advance. You had to say, I'm going to do this effect here for this reason, and here's how I'm going to do it. And you had to think about all that. Nowadays, you can just use, like, oh, I could just put this in. You don't have to. Originally, 8-bit when 8-bit games were made, they had a very specific set of limitations that they had to learn to work around. Nowadays, people don't have those sets of limitations, and I think sometimes certain limitations actually make you think more about why and how you're doing things, and
right.
Removing some of those limitations, while it does make it easier, also can make it, I don't want to say faker, but can also remove some of that intentionality. In the same way that having Photoshop can sometimes make you a slightly more lazier photographer. Because True. You can learn to rely on doing everything in post.
And that doesn't always give you the better picture.
It doesn't always give you the better picture. It
because can. then you're no longer thinking about composition and, right. and color because balance, because you're gonna fix it all in post. And
right. A good photographer takes good photography and then does interesting things with it in post. A bad photographer takes bad photographs and thinks, well, I'll just fix it in Photoshop.
Right.
Yes. And I think that's true of video games too. It's very easy to say, well, I have this limited palette, so I'm going to learn how to use it properly versus, well, I mean, I want to do this limited palette, but it's easier to just kind of do it like this, so I'm just going to do that. And I don't think that's always the case, but I definitely think there are some games that do that sort of faux 8 and 16 bit where it feels very phony because they don't actually hold themselves to it in the same way that because,
yeah, the failure is from a lack of, or comes from a result of lazy design.
Yes. Oh, I don't want to say lazy, but of
lazy design.
Shortcuts.
Lazy design.
Okay, lazy design. Fine. You're a designer, you get to say that. I'm not, so I don't. yeah, but I think it's sort of the same thing. I think it kind of comes to the same thing with this ASCII though, because the question then becomes, are you doing this, if you're not doing this out of nostalgia, or if you are doing this out of nostalgia, then I think the way to do it is to find a genre that harkens back nostalgically. If you're doing this because you want to find new uses for ASCII out of some feeling that it's underserved, then you need to start looking at new genres. As opposed to, why not do a remake of something like Kingdom of Kroz? Why right. not do a an ASCII platformer would be awesome.
Actually,
I don't think you need to do it, but if you want to do it because it's something you think would be awesome, do
well,
it.
Well, I mean, with that logic, you have to remember there's no game out there that we need to do.
No, but what I'm saying is if you're doing it because you think there is a difference between saying, I think we should do this because this would improve the game versus I think this would be a really good idea. So let's find an excuse to do it. That's basically what I'm getting.
Let's find an excuse to do it.
Okay. Then in that case, let's do an ASCII platformer.
Okay. Sounds good to me.
All right.
Is that it?
It can be. That's up to you.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So that's it for this spitball session. We'll be back with the mouthwash after this. Thing stuff button. Push the button. Push it. Push the button. I'm not good at silence.
It's time for the mouthwash. And welcome back to the mouthwash, where we spit fiery hot truth like with that sweet chin music. Speaking of sweet chin music, today we're going to be talking about sports management games, such as one that I've talked about several times before, Total Extreme Wrestling.
Two.
We're also going to be talking about Football Manager, which I've been playing a ton of recently, specifically the Scunthorpe team, which I was going to do a YouTube series on. Now that I'm starting to get a little better at the game, I may actually do that. You can check my YouTube channel. If it's out there, it'll be under the Scunthorpe problem, which is an actual problem in computer development, which refers to blacklisting phrases a little too aggressively, solve word blacklisting for looking for things that aren't actually swears but have swears inside of them. Is known as the Scunthorpe problem. So that was my thought, was to play that team because they're about mid-level in the ranks of the year that I'm playing, which is Football Manager 2013. But there's also NFL head coach is another one. There's an NBA one, or there's a basketball one. I don't know if it's officially NBA. And possibly the most insanely detailed one is the baseball sim game called, or a head manager game called Out of the Park, which I actually may have a copy of, so you should try that at some... Or I have a copy. I may have an extra copy that you should try at some point, Luke. Okay. Because if you really want your head to spin... So
I'm always looking for ways to screw my head off.
Yes. Well, there's a lot of screwballs in that game, literally, because it's a baseball game.
That did not sound right.
No. Anyway, so the thing about... So Out of the Park is the most insane one of these because it basically simulates every year of baseball history... I think it's like 1860 all the way through this year.
So it's kind of like Crusader Kings for baseball.
No, it's like fantasy football, but for baseball.
I liked my reference better.
Okay, but it's it's not really like that because...
There's less intrigue?
There's less graphics.
Oh, wow.
There's no map. It's just spreadsheets.
Right.
But you know, Out of the Park is weird because there are, it literally goes from, you can literally play with the players actually simulating their exact scores, or you can play it with letting them do different. So, you know, you could say, okay, Mickey Mantle in 1924 had this many home runs. So over the course of the season, he will get exactly that many home runs this year. No matter who he's up against, no matter what he's up against, he will always have that many home runs. Or as I understand it, I haven't actually played that version because that seems way too pedantic. But so you could literally play with them having the exact same stats and the exact same numbers in each game. And so basically it's just trade them so that you get the most optimal teams. Or you could play it with, well, using these stats, okay, here's how they would have played the game.
So,
and you could even do weird things like you could simulate lively ball in the early 1800s, or you could play it with 1800s rules in the 1900s. Like, the game is like really weird alternate history stuff.
Yeah, that's strange. All for baseball.
I will say that if you understand what lively ball means, Out of the Park might be the game for you. I don't really, and I don't like. I'm fascinated by Out of the Park, but that game is way too deep for me. Like, I like Football Manager. I like Total Extreme Wrestling. Out of the Park gets a little bit too far, even for me. Like, I just am completely lost. And I come from a family where my grandfather was a baseball coach, and my mother was a baseball scorekeeper for years. And I still have trouble following that game. So I never played that much. But, and I know you don't particularly like. You know, you said before you're not a huge fan of sports.
I'm not a sports guy. I mean, if anyone who's seen my Rocket League review,
nobody has seen that because you never published it.
Well, I think
I edited it. You never.
Okay, so that's good to go live.
It's good to go live. It has been for about 2 months.
Fantastic! It's just been sitting there.
Yeah,
I should put that up. Huh?
Okay, so anybody who's seen your Rocket League review will know that you don't like sports.
Well, I was also talking about my reviewish.
Oh, okay.
On YouTube, which is live.
Right.
Where I do declare that I do not like sports games. I don't really like sports in general. I've just never have
so
been.
What do you not like about sports, and then what do you not like about sports games?
I am not a very physical person.
Okay.
So it's very difficult for a not very physical person to get involved with something where they do not even excel, but can't even really compete in.
That's fair, although I'm not a super physical person, but I've always been very good at volleyball and tennis.
I've always been pretty decent in soccer because I could run and I can kick.
Right.
So I've been involved and I'm interested in that. But like baseball, football.
Yeah, no, I never went over.
They're not games that I've been involved in.
For me, it is like volleyball and tennis are net sports are very much the ones that I enjoy playing in my life.
Yeah, we've played tennis together before. Yeah. That's quite enjoyable. But like those mainstream sports, I've never really saw the fascination in them, and I don't care for them enough to put any effort into them.
Okay, so that makes sense for the real world ones. What do you have against sports video games?
Well, if I just, I guess my lack of interest is
so the theme, so you don't like the theme, so it's purely thematic for you,
more or less.
Okay, because I mean, I know, you know, I've talked to you about this before. Like, I know there are definitely people who don't play sports games because, like, they got beaten up by jocks in high school, and, you know, to some extent, I feel very little sympathy for those kinds of people.
There's a cultural stigma associated with sports and nerds.
Yes, or with nerds who want to play sports or who like sports.
Right.
You know, like the whole, I went and watched that sports ball this weekend. You know, I hate people who talk about sports like that. Like, just because you don't like it doesn't mean you have to denigrate people who do. Like, you can still let people like the things that they like without picking.
It's not like a past.
Oh no, I'm not saying you do.
Well, no, I'm as an example, I've been going to the Super Bowl game at a friend's house and watching it. Yeah. You know, like most people do. It's not usually something I'm so interested in that I'm willing to play the game or spend any of my hard-earned video game time.
That makes sense. So the reason that I think that more people should pay attention to sports games, especially or sports management games primarily, is, and I know that this is to some extent a losing battle because, heck, if Three Moves Ahead, who I consider possibly the greatest strategy podcast out there, can't convince people that sports games are strategy games, then I certainly can't, because I am not, you know, I am not Troy Goodfellow, nor am I,
I don't see why anyone would not think of a sports game as a strategy game.
I think a lot of people think of them purely as... I actually think, especially among the nerd community, I think a lot of people think that sports games don't require any amount of intellect because they think that jocks are stupid and that anything that a jock can do is clearly doesn't require any intelligence, which is obviously idiotic and wrong.
Well, yeah, I mean...
And
I don't know,
very reductive.
That I think that's a dangerous precedent on either side of that. Assuming that a lot of nerds feel that way, and also
I'm not assuming that. I have heard people say that before.
Okay,
so I'm not necessarily. I don't think it's a large group of people, but I've definitely heard people say, "Well, it can't be a strategy game because jocks are stupid," and
or. We'll avoid the term jocks.
We'll say, you know, people who play sports athletes are stupid. Mm-hmm. And so that, which, yes, there are stupid athletes. There are also very smart athletes. Like, athletes are a diverse group of individuals.
Boiling that down further, we'll use football as the primary example here. Football players and the sport of football appears to be violent, aggressive, and just a whole bunch of collisions.
Right.
From an untutored eye. And from my time watching football games with a friend who's into it.
Right.
And, you know, I have family who's interested in football, so I've known this to a certain extent. You learn that there is a huge strategic and tactical play going on, and that the people who actually manage the things and the guys who carry out the plays are very intelligent and very tactically minded to carry out what they have to be strong.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be capable, but they also have to be relatively smart.
And let's be fair. Like, not all of them are, and not all of them have to be. Like, not everybody on a football team needs to be a genius in the same way that not everybody in any job needs to be
a
genius.
Yeah, but the guys at the top
have to be. The people who are running the team and who are picking the plays and that stuff are very smart. And, you know, to some extent, I think that there is definitely a... And I can understand this. There's that feeling that, well, they're already in better shape and better looking than me, so at least I'm smarter than they are. You know, I think there, to some extent that is where some of that comes from. Not wanting to admit that people like that are smarter than you, but to some extent it's also just it's very reductive. And if
let's put this out there, if you actually feel that way, put your money where your mouth is, and go get a sports management game and prove that you can plan out.
Sure.
But
you don't have. I mean, you don't have to. It's not a competition. Or shouldn't be, but also...
It is!
Okay, but also what I'm saying is...
Compete!
Fair enough. But what I'm saying is even beyond that, you know... I lost my train of thought.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. I mean, on the one hand, it's not a competition. On the other hand, like... It goes back to what we were talking about with the fishing episode, which is... most of the people who are saying that have never bothered to learn enough of what they're talking about to, like, they aren't looking at it with an educated eye. And yes, from the, in the same way that fishing looks like a very simple and easy thing to do from the outside, it's just, you throw a line, you reel it in, you throw a line, you reel it in. Once you actually do it, you're like, no, there's actually a whole lot involved in it. And you don't even necessarily have to be smart in the traditional sense, but you have, you know, practice and experience can trump intelligence sometimes. Like, knowing what you're doing and knowing how it works sometimes trumps being brainy. Like, you know, oh, I know that I'm going to play this way because this is how football works.
That's true. And that's something to be said. There's one thing about just not being bothered, but if you don't want to play something because you don't think it's intelligent enough or something to that effect, I think that throwdown counts. You should get to try it.
Absolutely.
And see whether or not you're right.
Yeah, I mean, like, if somebody doesn't enjoy something, like, don't do it. I don't do things that I don't enjoy. I mean, you do sometimes because I have to go to work and I have to pay my salary.
And you drink bird's nest.
Right. You know, I do occasionally do things I don't like, but, you know, if you're not enjoying something, don't do it. Like, that's an obvious thing to say. But don't not do it because you think you're above it. Like, right. At least learn about it and then say, oh, no, this just isn't something I'm into. Don't say, well, I'm not doing that because I'm better than that. Like, that's not cool. That's not a good, no, that's not a good position.
But
I also want to make it clear. I'm not saying everybody is like that. So for those people who haven't already pre-decided, no, I'm not interested in sports because I think sports are stupid, or I'm not interested in sports because they're boring or whatever, you know, I will say that I think that it is really an interesting, you know, something I've learned the more I've played Football Manager is there's actually a very large amount of strategy involved beyond even just the tactical, well, am I going to go with a 4-4-2 formation or a 5-3-1 formation? 5-3-2 formation, you can't do a 5-3-1. Anyway, you know, beyond like what formation am I going to play? Am I going to have people kick long or short? There's also the things like, well, how am I going to get people? What people am I going to do? How am I going to match people up? You know, there's a lot of, I actually think tactical may be a more accurate way of putting like what you're doing on the field, but there's also the broader decisions of hirings, firings, working with people, and that sort of aspect.
Yeah.
You know, if you like something like, you know, like you said, if you like something like Crusader Kings, I actually think that in some ways you would find sports management game. You know, you're trying to build a dynasty, which is the same as, or a
the same thing team, as trying to build a dynasty.
It's the same as trying to build a dynasty. You are hiring and acquiring people and putting them together in ways to emphasize their stats in the same way that in Crusader Kings, you are having children and you are marrying them off to form stronger relationships and make friends and make enemies, and you are declaring war and you're fighting with your rivals. There's all that political manipulation in the back end of something like Football Manager or Total Extreme Wrestling. And then when you actually get out into the night, then it's, well, how am I going to do this? How am I going to set this up? Like, for me, Total Extreme Wrestling, I still enjoy more than I enjoy Football Manager just because I find professional wrestling more fun than, like, Football Manager is fun from a strategic level. Total Extreme Wrestling, I enjoy more from a narrative because I get to form my, like, I get to tell my own wrestling stories. It's fun. Even to somebody who doesn't actually enjoy, like, the secret of me as a wrestling correspondent, I don't actually watch wrestling because I don't actually like watching wrestling. But I like wrestling stories. I like wrestling storytelling. I like the soap opera of it. So, like, for me, Total Extreme Wrestling is the best of both worlds because I don't actually have to watch any wrestling.
You just get to plan out the opera.
But I get to plan out the soap opera. So, for me, that's, like, the best of both worlds. Which is not to say that I don't like all wrestling. There are some wrestlers that I really enjoy watching in action. But, for the most part, it's all of the fun of a wrestling show, minus all of the really irritating parts about having to actually watch professional wrestling, which is kind of garbage. So it's great. I get the strategic aspect of how do I lay this out to make sure that the people who, for example, I have in Total Extreme Wrestling, you have people who are very good entertainers. You have people who are very good wrestlers. You have people who are good brawlers. You have people who aren't very popular, but you still need somebody to get beaten up every night. You need people who fans like. You need people who fans don't like, because somebody's got to be the bad guy. You know, and then you need to figure out, okay, well, from a storytelling aspect, this would work, but this character is super popular, so I can't put him up against this character. So what do I do here? How do I maneuver this? So there is both a narrative and a strategic aspect of laying it out in a way that will actually reward you. And then you have the broader aspect of, well, this company is going under. Who should I raid for new employees? Or who can I fire? Or this guy's absolutely toxic in my back room. How do I get rid of him without having to pay his salary?
That's interesting. Let's ask a question.
Okay.
Last episode, which is our bonus episode,
yes,
we talked about what we would do to define a game.
Yes.
Using our classification system, would you call it a game?
Is Total Extreme Wrestling a game? No.
Why not?
There's no end goal. There's no predefined end goal. In the same way that I would not consider open TTD a game, I would not consider Total Extreme Wrestling a game.
Okay.
I would consider Football Manager a game.
Because your goal is to complete...
Because your goal is to complete a season. In some ways, you could... Depending on... Total Extreme Wrestling is interesting because it is technically three different things put together.
Right.
Because it goes all the way down to... You could turn off all things that make you actually have to think, and you could do it purely as storytelling. You could purely just fantasy sim.
Let it run and then imagine what's actually going on.
No. I mean, like, you could turn off all... Basically, you can make it let you put whoever you want together at any time, and it doesn't matter. Like, you can turn off losing money, you can turn off losing popularity, you can turn off not being able to hire and fire different people. Like, you can make it so that you can, like, people have made mods for it. So, like, people have made mods for, you know, if you wanted to play 1997, put all of your favorite wrestlers from the WWE and the WCW together in one company, and then just night after night book the match, your dream matches every night, and your dream storylines. You can do that. And you can do whatever you want, and there's no goals, there's no judgment, there's no nothing. Like, you don't have to worry about finances. It's literally just a role-playing game. Or a Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah.
It's literally just a tabletop RPG, and you are doing whatever you want.
Right.
But then there's the sort of middle ground, which is the way I play it, where there is some structure, but you buy a you play the head of a company, and it is your job to keep the company in business and expand and keep your cash flow positive. And that's more game-y, but it's still not a game. It's still a sandbox. But then there is also a third version where you can play it as just the head booker of the company, and you have a boss, and the boss says, okay, by the end of the year, I want this wrestler to be super popular. We need to make this much money. We need to have risen to national popularity level, and you can't hire anybody who isn't safe. You can't hire anybody who's injured somebody in the last year.
Right.
And so, at that point, that gets close to a game. I still don't think it's a game because
they
have
gamification layers, but that's not the intention of the game.
No, it is. I mean, the intention of the game is to build a big company. It's to build a popular wrestling company.
And with no major goal in mind other than just making it.
Yeah, it's a score chase.
Score chase!
If you want to call it that. Yeah. Or, you know, it's like SimCity. The goal is to build a big wrestling company.
Okay. But
Football Manager, I think, has a little more structure to it. I mean, obviously, at the end of the day, the goal is you want to be the best soccer team in your country.
Soccer? Okay.
Soccer, Football Manager, as in association football.
I gotcha. I'm just crazy. I'm thinking American football for some crazy.
No, that's called NFL head coach.
Okay. So, and with that one, the idea, I was going to say, it's a good thing I didn't use that word, but so the idea is just to win.
So you have a season, and the goal is to win the most games, you know, as many games out of the season. And then, like, depending on what country you're in, like, there's separate cups.
Finals and stuff like that.
Well, there's finals, but, like, sometimes there's also, like, they have separate tournaments that you might wind up going
depending
to.
Depending on what,
Right, so like...
So it represents the actual structure of the football leagues.
Right.
Overseas.
And your goal is to, like, I started as what is called N-Power 2, which is, like, basically the equivalent of, like, AAA baseball. Like, you know, you're not major leagues, but we're not minor leagues. We're somewhere in between. You know, there's a couple tiers up that we can go. So, you know, my goal eventually is... My team, my boardroom wants our team to get to N Power 1 and then to get to, we are N Power 1. We want to get up to the Premier League and then we want to be the top of the Premier League. Like, that's the goal. The goal is to be the best soccer league.
And you have so many matches to do it in and stuff like
that. No, I mean, it is an ongoing thing, which is, it, Which is why I say it's more of a game. It's still not totally a game. But it is more of a game because, like, there is at least an end goal.
Right.
I mean, you can still keep playing after you achieve the end goal in the same way that you couldn't say Civilization. But there is at least a
goal. But you've completed the game by that point. Well, that
you've at least you've at least completed the goals that the game has set for you.
Okay. All right.
I mean, theoretically, if you wanted to keep your team on top of the Premier League for 50 years, you could do that. All right. You know, like, at some point, that stops. I mean, in the same way that, hey, if you're playing the Boston Red Sox, you could make the argument that technically your goal is to just always have the best baseball team ever.
So, great. Sports management games. What about, like, say, like FIFA?
I actually like FIFA a lot.
Yeah.
So, I would say FIFA's good. MLB The Show is really good, which is a PlayStation-only game. So, for baseball, it would be, I would say MLB The Show is probably the best there is.
Okay.
FIFA is probably the best soccer.
I know that one's very popular. My frustration with FIFA and games similar to that, my major issue with it, I don't have a problem with them as games,
okay.
And I might play with one, but what really keeps me from picking it up is just that knowledge that I'm going to buy it this year, and then there's going to be a new one next year.
So here's my,
and
so
they're here's my practically feeling. Identical.
Right. Well, so here's my feeling about that. I have the same thought. I don't buy them every year.
I wouldn't.
Right. Because here's the thing. I'm not, if I was a diehard, let's say if I was a diehard, my family is a diehard Red Sox fan. If I also was a diehard Red Sox fan, mm-hmm. and I wanted to have the complete roster, the team that I cared about, I would go out and buy it every year. Because the major thing that you're buying each year for is the accurate teams.
Why don't they just have like a yearly patch to update the teams?
Because they couldn't sell it for as much money.
That's true. They make another $60 every year.
I mean,
off of each person
right.
who wants it.
But so here's the thing: I'm not playing them as annualized sports. I'm not playing them because I care about the 2015 Boston Red Sox. I'm playing them because I would like a game that is good at baseball. So what I do is every 4 or 5 years, once or twice every console cycle, I say which is the best of the baseball games or football games or soccer games to have come out in the past 5 or 6 years. Because usually there is a year that is considered, in any five year span, there's usually a game that is considered the best. It has this feature that was really fun, and they had this that worked really well. You go, you buy that one. It's usually a little cheaper because it's not the current year. I mean, if you go 2 or 3 years back, they're like $8-$10.
Well, and that and the fact that you'd have to have been looking at reviews and feedback to get
right.
a good idea of what you want.
And then you pick out the one that you actually want. It's cheaper, and you're not playing it for the roster. You are playing it because you want to play a soccer game. Like I think I have FIFA like 2013 or 2012, and I really like it. And no, is it up to date? Heck no. I imagine half of the players in that game have probably retired by this point because they are all in their late 20s and early 30s, and that's too old to play soccer. Well, like 29 seems to be around the cap, 29-30, which is really sad, but because I'm already older than that.
Yeah, me too.
But, I think that's what a lot of it is don't buy it every year. Because here's the thing. If you cared enough, you would.
That doesn't seem underhanded to you? Like it's exploiting?
No.
No?
Because here's the thing. The people who actually care really care.
That's true.
I mean, in the same way that... I mean, there are a lot of games. I mean, Call of Duty comes out every year. There's not a huge change between that every year.
I don't think that's very good either.
But the people who want it because they've already played the old one. I buy board games all the time,
Well, that's different.
It's not that different.
No, it's not. I mean, would you buy Carcassonne every year?
I buy expansions for Carcassonne.
Expansions are not the same. That's like buying an expansion for FIFA. Okay. If it came out as a 2016 expansion for $20.
How many Final Fantasies have you bought?
Not that many. We have a few, but I bought them after the fact.
How many of the same copy of Final Fantasy have you bought?
The same copy? I don't know. You'd have to ask my
wife. How many copies of Final Fantasy IV do you guys have?
Probably two, if that.
If I go out right now, I could buy 5 different copies of Final Fantasy IV.
I'm not saying it doesn't happen.
Yeah. I'm just saying I...
Well, that Nintendo's... this is kind of weird that we're jumping to this when we're trying to talk about sports games. I think it's a common occurrence,
yes,
for people to publish and republish the same thing, but I think it's particularly notorious with FIFA as an example.
I actually think
seasonal sports games
of all of them, I actually think FIFA is one of the better ones. They actually, I do feel, do quite a bit each year. I mean, there's only so much you could do, because at the end of the day, it's soccer. There's only so much you could do with soccer. But I mean, the difference between like PlayStation 2 and PlayStation 3 soccer is quite different. There's new career stuff, there's deeper career modes, they've added things.
Like, taking advantage of the better graphics.
But I mean, even I don't care about physics. I don't care that much about the graphics. But I mean, there is even just things like players pass more realistically. They act more realistically.
They cuddle more often.
What?
There's like something, one of them where they collide and they end up.
Yeah, exactly. Cuddling. But I mean, you know, I would actually liken it to something like Total War. I mean, yes, each of the Total Wars has slightly different time periods, but they're still basically the same game, but they come out every year or two.
Okay.
I don't necessarily I don't buy them. So, but on the other hand, I don't buy them every year. So it's very easy for me to say that.
Right.
My feeling is that most of the people who are buying sports games on an annual basis are people who really, really, really care about sports. Now, let's be honest, those people are also paying money to go see sports games. And true. They're also paying money to...
It is a very big, especially in America.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's more so than, say, Europe.
Soccer is way bigger in Europe.
Soccer or football, as the Europeans would call it.
Yes.
But I know American football and American baseball are multi-billion-dollar businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. And
not even taking into account
at this point, there are people who pay $50 or $100 a year to play fantasy football.
Yeah,
which, you know, Madden is $50. I don't necessarily, you know, I think fantasy football is really cool too. I just don't have the time or energy to play it, which is why I play Football Manager. It's basically the same thing. But so, here's my feeling. I think I will split the difference with you on this one, which is it exploitative? No. Could it be exploitative? Yes. At some point, though, is that on the buyer to beware? Yes.
True.
You don't have to buy it every year. Should they offer the opportunity to do, like, say, DLC 2 years and then put out a game every 3 years? Yes, I think for multiple reasons, not least of which being that it would actually give them time to make more changes. On the other hand, only so much you can change football.
Well, and that also makes more sense if you were to do it in that way, because you would always be working off of the existing engine.
Yep.
And you would just be adding to it.
Sure.
And it wouldn't be like they wouldn't feel obliged to make changes to it to some extent to justify the re-release.
Well, I will say this. I feel like if the companies that did sports games were not all the largest of the five, you know, of the, like, we're all not the big five of the game software, we would probably see that happen. But they're all the biggest, like, EA is FIFA, EA is Madden.
It's all EA.
Baseball is, or MLB, the show, is Sony. But, you know, and I think Ubisoft is one of the others. But, yeah, it's all EA, and, you know, it's all big companies. And Ux does WWE.
And that's because they own the licenses to these big franchises.
Right, and that's because you have to own the licenses. But and they're big companies. They have to put the game out every year because, I mean, let's be honest, Madden is, like, one of the things that keeps EA afloat.
Sure.
Like, they have to put that out. I mean, actually, if you want to talk about the game that I'd like to see take a few years off, because it doesn't need to do the insane number of roster edits that the other games do, I'd like to see the WWE games take 2 years off, because they're kind of bad now. It would be nice to see them take 2 years off, make a good game, and put it out.
So, like, it would be sensible for them, because, like, a game in development normally is about 3 years.
It's about two.
We'll say 2 to 3 years. We really give them 3 years.
Yeah.
They could set a team on every game cycle to spend that 3 years to build a new engine and system, and in the meantime have another smaller team just releasing DLC to keep that current existing game.
Yeah.
Fed.
Yeah. They will never do it. They will never do it because
no, they won't because they wouldn't make money. They wouldn't expect to make nearly as much money.
Right. Exactly.
However, I think it would bring in a lot more money because people like you.
Yeah.
Who
I don't buy the WWE
buy
games.
The latest WWE game.
Right.
And would probably keep up with the roster if it was only like 10 to 15
Yeah, I might
bucks.
Do that. Well, and the other reality is if they took a couple years off, they could actually maybe make a good one because
then they'd have a team spending 3 years putting as much as they could into it to make it a good game.
And because right now the WWE games are terrible. terrible. Like, not even not good. They are actively bad. Like,
they are actively bad.
Like, if you like wrestling, there is nothing for you in the WWE games, because that is not wrestling. That is fighting. They want to be fighting games, but wrestling isn't fighting. Wrestling is fake. Wrestling is a story. Like, they need to put more of the fictional stuff in there. They can't treat it like it's an MMA contest. It's not an MMA.
That's true.
But when we're talking about fantasy games, there are fantasy sports. There is another whole genre that we could talk about when we're talking about fantasy sports beyond just fantasy football.
What genre is that?
Fantasy sports.
Okay, give me an example.
Blood Bowl.
Okay, I remember that game.
Which is a tabletop board game that has a video game version of it, where you're
playing.
It's somewhere
orc football. Essentially.
It's somewhere between football and rugby. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you have eight to ten players on a side, or 10 to 12 players on a side, and each of them has special moves, and each of them has special ability, or it's usually two. You have like four different types of players, and each of those types has a special ability. Like, you know, you might have if you're playing the hobbit team, you have a troll, and one of the trolls can throw the hobbits, and you have regular hobbits, and then you have like running hobbits, and you have like linebackers and whatnot, and like each race has its own slightly special abilities, and so, you know, that's one way of doing it. Like, I think Blood Bowl is a really interesting game for people. You know, if you want to play a sports game, or a game that has all of the aspects of sports, the strategy, the team management, the whatever, but you don't like sports, Blood Bowl might be one to look into, because it still lets you do all of those things, like building a team, planning out your tactics, learning the basic combat concepts of football, such as you don't put your ball carrier on the front lines, for example. Because he's going to immediately get tackled. Like, you know, you want to set up block. Like, it teaches you about things like blocking lines and blocking passes and screens, which are all things that people who understand sports know inherently, and that people like me kind of had to figure out as we go along. Oh, that's what that is. Okay. But another really good one is Frozen Cortex, which is by the Frozen Synapse people.
That's a sports game?
It's a sports game where you're playing. It's also sort of football, rugby-ish, where you have, you know, but it's turn-based.
Right.
In the same way that Frozen Synapse is. So.
And it's got that synchronous turn-taking thing?
Yeah, it's the WeGo system where it's you both plot out your moves and then they both happen at the same time.
Yeah, that's actually a cool
it's
system.
It's really weird. That game is really hard. Like, really
I'll
hard.
Bet. I mean, the original Frozen Synapse game was hard, too.
Yeah, no, this is way harder than Frozen Synapse. Because one thing is, if you pass the ball, the game stops when it gets caught. If you don't pass the ball, the game only stops after 5 seconds. So if you miss a play and the guy starts running, he could be all the way at the goal line before you realize it. Whereas if he throws the ball, there's a good chance you could realize what's going on and move to intercept.
So it's got some interesting.
It does some really interesting stuff with strategy. That's another really good one. If you want to try some team management stuff. That one's the team management is actually much less interesting. That one's the tactically much more solid tactically.
I can think of a good one.
What's that?
It's actually a mod for StarCraft, the original StarCraft.
Okay.
Zergling Soccer.
Oh, Zergling Soccer. Yep.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. The premise being that you're actually scoring points by directing Zerglings to an enemy goal. The Zerglings were passive and invincible. So when you shot them with a unit, they would run away from your unit. And the idea was to shoot them with your units to get them into the opponent's goal, scoring points. It's kind of a cool idea.
There's also, Monday Night Combat is basically this.
Oh, I remember that. Isn't there another game?
It's more like a MOBA, but it's also sporty.
It's a sporty MOBA.
Yeah. And then, I mean, also I should point out Rocket League.
Rocket League, of course. I mean,
you know, it's funny because for all you say you don't like sports, like Rocket League, like you will be good at Rocket League.
I cover that a bit in my review-ish about the fact that despite my general dislike for sports games, that game is awesome, and I love that game.
But what's funny is, like, but I mean, what I'm saying is it's really funny that you say that because in my mind, like, Rocket League is sports distilled down to tactical positioning, extremely important, teamwork, extremely important, overlap, extremely important. Like,
I don't have problems with those specific features.
No, I know, but it's just like, and maybe this is why the game works for you so well. But I think it's, you know, it takes all of the things that are important in sports games and strips out all of the excess. So you don't have to worry about, you know, you don't really need all the skill stuff so much. You don't need a lot of the tactical stuff. So, like, you know, I will say the one thing that for me that I really hate about sports games, is when you play sports, like, one aspect of being good at sports is muscle memory. Like,
yes,
I learn how kicking works. I learn, you know, in tennis, I know how to swing. The difference between how I swing my arm is the difference between a flat and a slice and an underhand and a lob and etc. And then when I go to play a tennis game on a console, it is always really hard because what I think I want to do never corresponds to the buttons I want to press. And even when I hit the right button, I never feel like I have the right kind of control.
So you kind of have to if it's a game you're familiar with, you still have to think about how to carry out things that are natural to you when you play the actual sport.
Because there isn't, I mean, there's only so much feedback and there's only so much you can do with a joystick, but, you know, the difference between naturally swinging my arm, like, when I swing my arm, I know how hard I have to swing my arm to hit something.
Right.
With a joystick, I mean, I guess you could argue that just like with sports, you should have to, you know, if you practice with it long enough, you'll get the idea of it. But typically in these games, you are playing professional sports players. Like, you know, a professional tennis player does not just randomly make errors when they're swinging their tennis racket. They don't, no. You know,
they always unforced land the ball.
Tennis errors are very rare.
They always land the ball relatively close to where they intended.
Yes, and I mean, at the higher levels, like, some of them can land it within a quarter of an inch.
Well, yeah, you always see that when they score. They're, like, they drop that ball right on the line.
Yeah, oh yeah, I mean, yes, they're the highest level tennis players can hit within a quarter of an inch from the length of a tennis field.
Yep.
Like, it's insane. And so the fact that when I'm playing a tennis game, like, on the one hand, I get it because I'm not a professional tennis player as an actual person. So of course I can't get it within that, but I'm playing as a professional tennis player. So either you have to start me out as a non-professional who's learning these things in a career type mode, or you need to figure this out a little better so that I feel like even when I'm not doing what I want, you know, even if I'm not doing it perfectly, I should at least be getting close to what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, so, you know, when you're playing that pro tennis player, it feels like you're playing a pro tennis player.
It should not feel like, you know, 80% of my shots should not be false, because that's not how tennis works. Like, that's not... Like, I don't do that as an amateur, so a professional should not be doing that.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think for me, I think that's a lot of why some people get really frustrated with sports games is, you know, I think with most games, that gap between how it feels like it should be and how it actually is puts people off very quickly. And I think sports games, because everybody has seen sports. And so you can instantly tell when something feels wrong in a way that you couldn't necessarily in a game like, say, Far Cry.
Yes, that's true.
You know, because I have never been chasing a warlord in an African savannah.
And that is exacerbated if you have no interest or any experience playing real sports.
Right. Or even if you do. I mean, it's just, well, if I'm playing a baseball game and my, as a player's batting average is .001, I would never get on a baseball team. Like, an average baseball batting average is like .18. Like, if I'm under that, that doesn't feel right. That doesn't feel real. Like, even if you don't know batting averages, you could say, well, I've missed 17 out of my last 18 at-bats. Something's wrong here.
Yeah.
So, I actually think that may be where some of that discrepancy lies for people.
Well,
not like you, but people sort of in the mid-ground between the two of us who say, well, I never feel like I'm in control.
You know what it is? It's lacking that feeling of empowerment that most games provide you with.
Yes.
And so I guess a good question there is, do you think that's a bad thing? Or
I don't.
Or do you think the empowerment is the problem?
I don't think it's the bad thing. I think it's that the messaging is off. Because what it's telling you is you're a professional player or a professional team. And what you are, and the way you, that your characters actually are behaving is as amateurs. You are making errors that professionals don't make.
Yeah.
Because it still needs to be a video game and it needs to challenge you. So I think there's a level in between those two. Like, you know, I think some games get it better than others. I think FIFA does it very well because there's that sort of, it sort of counters for some of that. Like, yes, sometimes you might miss a pass, but sometimes you miss a pass in real life too. Like, that happens because the person you're trying to pass to has moved on and you just miss, or somebody gets in the way of it and bumps it. Like, I don't notice it being off in quite the same way that I do when I'm playing a tennis game, and I can say, well, no, I know what tennis plays like.
Right.
And football is kind of the same way. Like, yes, there are times when you may get sacked more often than you would in real life, but real life, you know, Madden tends to play... I actually think most of the games where it's not direct one-on-one competition actually feel like they play a little more realistically. Like basketball, I find tends to be okay, although I find that I still miss shots more than I should, but I feel like it feels more realistic. You know, so team games I find tend to do better, solo games I find tend to do a lot worse. So right. Tennis tends to do badly, professional wrestling is terrible, and baseball is...
Well, professional wrestling is terrible for other reasons.
Professional wrestling is terrible for other reasons.
It's because it lacks the proper sense of spectacle, I think.
It lacks the practical sense of spectacle. And to some extent, like, because you can't... Because... I think I said this in my review of Total Extreme Wrestling. At some point, the things that make professional wrestling interesting are an anathema to video games, because the things that make professional wrestling interesting are the parts where you pretend it's not real.
Right.
And the only way to make that...
And the point is,
something not being real is an anathema to a...
Well, because video games take things that are not real and make them feel real.
Right.
And so that's like the exact contradiction.
Yes.
To, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And with that, once again, way too much to talk about professional wrestling. But otherwise, I don't think I've changed any minds here today, but that is sort of where I'm going to close my pitch. Is
yeah, almost had me ready to try out one of those football games, but
I would say try a FIFA game. I feel like that is a good balance of the two. Of it's not too numbers heavy. There's still some physical, you know, there's still some, like, you still get to play. You know, you get to run around, you get to kick a ball. It's fun, and you get to do some strategy. But that being said, you know, that's sort of going to be where I close my pitch is. I think sports games are interesting for the parts where they are strategy games. And I think that people who like strategy games should give sports another try. You may not like them, and that's fine. Like, there are a lot of things I don't like either. I don't particularly like Hearts of Iron, but a lot of people love it. So, you know... But find the things that work for you. Don't play things you don't like. But do at least look at it and try examining it from the perspective of a strategy, because there is a lot going on under the hood.
A lot more than most people assume.
A lot more than most people assume, and a lot more than I assumed, which is maybe part of why I'm doing this. Is partially a mea culpa of, yeah, I didn't give this genre enough credit for a long time. And it turns out that, no, there is actually some really interesting stuff in there. And I would say, you know... That sort of advice that I gave you in the middle of the show is definitely the thing. Like, if you are not interested in it beyond the sense of, hey, I'd like to experience a sport a little bit, don't bother buying the newest version. Just find a version that you like that's cheap and pick it up, because you're really only playing it for the experience. You're not playing it for the accurate teams. You don't need the accurate teams.
All right.
And that, I will say... if you have any questions, thoughts, or pitch ideas, please send them to us at spitball.sessions@gmail.com. Check out our writing and other articles at neoncheetahs.com. You can find me at twitch.tv/Kaholos or at Kaholos on YouTube.
Kaholos!
K-O-H-O-L-O-S. You can find Luke at twitch.tv/TheDrell or TheDrell on YouTube, which is T-H-E-D-R-E-L-L-E. I'd like to thank myself now, who has their new sound engineer. So if anybody out there has any tips or advice that they'd like to pass along to me, please let me know. You can do that at Spitball Session, SpitballSession on Twitter. Throw me a bone there, people. Luke, I'd like to thank you again for joining me.
You're very welcome.
And I'd like to thank you at home for listening to another exciting Spitball Session. Tune in next time. Till then, keep your feet in the batter's box and your eye on the ball, because we're going to be playing sports games all the time.
I hope not. Not all the time.
Okay. Because we'll have another hot pitch coming. Thank you for joining us for yet another fun episode of Spitball Sessions. We hope you had a good time. Please pay attention as you exit the stadium to make sure that you're not run over by any cars, trucks, or other moving objects. If you'd like to contact us, you can drop us a line at spitball.sessions@gmail.com or on Twitter @spitballsession. Please leave us reviews on your podcasting platform of choice so that other people can help find the show. Remember, we can't do this without you. And come back in 2 weeks for the next exciting installment of the Spitball Session. Remember, only you can prevent bad games.